Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Welcome to A Plate in Time. Hello, Convonauts, and welcome to Culinary Convo, Plate in Time. We are here with 1950s South America, and I am doing it solo today. A good buddy of the pod, Joel, is helping his mom out with some yard work things and other things that he needs to work on. And then also, Kaylee, my wife, she is busy doing all sorts of stuff for me and the two little kitty cats of the pod, Biscuit and Benny. And so I'll be going through this, you know, solo. It'll be a grand old time. Maybe not as many interruptions, you know what I mean? So we'll be going through it. Like I said, 1950s, South America, did a spin the wheel for a random country. And I've been to South America now on Plate on Time twice for the 60s and 70s. So I decided, you know, I'm going to eat up all of these South American countries and I'm not going to have anything left for mapping the culinary world or anything else. And so I stuck to one country, but it is an interesting country here in 1950s South America. And that country is Aruba. That is right, Aruba. Just a little background of Aruba before we hit the 1950s. You got the oil industry arrived in the 1920s and brought rapid modernization and immigration of industrial laborers, merchants, and civil servants from the Caribbean, Europe, the Americas, and China, says everyculture.com, Aruba. It says Aruba became a pluralistic society of over 40 nationalities. Afro-Caribbean migrants surpassed the traditional population in economic position and cultural esteem. The position of the traditional elite as commercial entrepreneurs was taken over by Lebanese, Jewish, and Chinese immigrants or migrants and foreign trade companies. The Eagle Oil Refining Company, a Royal Dutch Shell affiliate, ceased its activities in 1953. A major economic setback occurred when the last major international oil company, Lago, owned by Exxon, went out of business in 1985. Tourism, which was first initiated in the 1950s, strongly expanded and became the main economic pillar. The need for labor resulted in a new wave of immigration for the Americas, the Caribbean, the Philippines, and the Netherlands. Aruba has been part of the Dutch Empire since 1636. Quite some time. I mean, what is it? Columbia sailed the ocean blue in 1492, so a little after that. Between 1845 and 1954, Aruba, Curaçao, Bonaire, and the Windward Islands of Saba sent Eustatius and the Dutch part of Sint Maarten formed the colony of Curaçao Independencies. As a relatively wealthy island, Aruba worked to separate itself from the colony since 1933. Insular nationalism was strengthened by cultural and racial differences with Curaçao. But in 1954, the Netherlands Antilles were granted autonomy within the Dutch kingdom. After a rebellion on Curaçao in 1969, the Netherlands pressed for formal independence of the six Antillean islands. Out of fear of becoming decolonized as part of the Netherlands Antilles, Aruba opted for separate status. Despite unwillingness on the part of Curaçao and the Netherlands, Aruba became an autonomous part of the Dutch kingdom in 1986. The decision that Aruba would become fully independent in 1996 was revoked. Aruba remains autonomous within the Dutch kingdom. San Nicolas on the east side of the island is the second largest town, and the industrial center, its industrial and private buildings date from the 1940s and 50s. Plans for preservation and restoration are hampered by a lack of funds and political priority. which I'm guessing they are not the only country that probably has those issues in terms of preservation and restoration. Most people are looking for new things, right? Especially citizens in a country. They're wanting more infrastructure, more things to be built up. And especially in these islands with tourism and other things going around that are going to be your major economic players. Restoration and preservation is great for a lot of things that could be tourist attractors, right? Like, you know, you got the Alamo, right? You got like different things in history. I'm sure that Aruba would like to keep around. But, you know, sometimes the political priority is, do you go with what's old and going to keep you around? Or do you go with the new that's going to lead into a new frontier and something that will change Aruba, hopefully for the better? So moving on to the food in daily life, the traditional menu maize dishes, so fonchi and panbati, goat meat, fish, and stoba, or stew pots of local vegetables, so peas and beans, dominate the food. Nowadays, rice, chicken, beef, and fish are eaten most. The number one snack is the pastechi, a small pie filled with cheese or beef. International food chains and Chinese, Italian, and other ethnic restaurants have gained popularity. Most food products are imported, so not grown on the island, which this is fairly typical for an island nation. You know, you got to import quite a bit, and being on an island, you're going to have a lot of real estate that is beach or coastline, and so the interior of your island, you gotta be a little wary of growing too much because you have to have a population. So that's going to happen. A lot of importation. Same with Hawaii there on the west. And so going over their food customs at ceremonial occasions, food is an important ingredient at most secular celebrations. At children's parties, a piñata filled with sweets hangs on the ceiling. Blindfolded, the children try to hit the piñata with a stick, or a bolo preto, a black cake, is offered at special occasions. So yeah, that bolo preto, a black cake, pretty interesting. The military activity. Now, this is important because of when it was started. There has been no military activity on or near the island since 1942, when a German submarine attacked the Lago and Eagle oil refineries. Part of the Dutch forces went to the Caribbean and is in Savaneta, where approximately 270 Dutch and Aruban Marines are stationed. Their primary task is to protect the island and its territorial waters. The Coast Guard of the Netherlands, Antilles, and Aruba started operations in 1995 to protect the islands and territorial waters from drug trafficking. In 1999, a division of the Maritime Interdiction Division of the United States Customs Service, that's a wordful, started surveying international waters for drug trafficking. And so, always getting into those international waters and different things going on. A lot of stories with Aruba and crime that I've heard. Some famous cases and things, missing people. But the main thing is that ain't because of the people and it ain't because of the food. So we continue on. The main thing is that I looked up on I tried to search, you know, what was going on in the 50s in Aruba that would be, you know, kind of like a big deal. And it said here that there was a journal that someone had written basically a huge article on 1951 in Aruba. This scholar article, it is through the Gale Literature Resource Center, written by author Chelsea Shields in the winter of 2016, I'm guessing is when it was published, basically talking about really the main protest happening in the 50s in Aruba. It is called, This is the Soul of Aruba Speaking, the 1951 Campo Alegre Protest and Insular Identity on Aruba. It says here in 1951, at the onset of major decolonization initiatives, you had in the Netherlands Antilles, thousands of residents on Aruba successfully joined in protest to defeat Campo Alegre, a proposed brothel near the Aruban oil refining city of San Nicolas. This article considers the protest movement within the context of Antillean decolonization and argues that debates over sexual politics played an important role in popularizing an Aruban identity separate from neighboring Curaçao, then seat of the government of the Netherlands Antilles, and site of the first Campo Alegre brothel. Through analysis of Aruban archival sources, this article examines how the protest movement exploited decolonization policy while also drawing on the rhetoric of leading local political parties who claimed racial and cultural superiority to Curaçao. And so you have kind of this wonderment of folks trying to figure out what they can do for this, you know, island nation. And what are they going to do to not only economically bolster themselves, but attract not only people, but businesses to the island? So if you have any type of legal journal or science journal, scholar journal thing, you can read that at the Gale Resource Center. But yeah, the main thing was, is that was a huge protest going over a culturally significant event in 1951 in Aruba. And it seems like Aruba and Curaçao have had kind of a strange history. Going off of Wikipedia here, mainly going over the Aruban Island, in August 1947, Aruba formulated its first Staatsreglement, a constitution for Aruba's status aparte as an autonomous state within the Kingdom of the Netherlands, prompted by the efforts of Henny Imaan, a noted Aruban politician. By 1954, the Charter of the Kingdom of the Netherlands was established, providing a framework for relations between Aruba and the rest of the kingdom that created the Netherlands Antilles, which united all of the Dutch colonies in the Caribbean into one administrative structure. Many Arubans were unhappy with the arrangement, however, as the new policy was perceived as being dominated by Curaçao. Once again, that darn Curaçao. Access to biocapacity in Aruba is much lower than the world average. In 2016, Aruba had a 0.57 global hectares, hectares of biocapacity per person within its territory, much less than the world average of 1.6 global hectares per person. In 2016, Aruba used 6.5 global hectares of biocapacity per person. So way over their 0.57. Their ecological footprint of consumption was that 6.5. This means they use almost 12 times the biocapacity that Aruba contains. This is the extent of Aruba's biocapacity deficit. The official exchange rate of the Aruban florin is pegged to the U.S. dollar at 1.79 florins to U.S. $1. This fact and the majority of tourists being from the U.S. means businesses of hotel and resort districts prefer to bank and trade with the consumer in U.S. dollars. Aruba is a prosperous country. Unemployment is low, although the government has not published stats on it since 2013. And per capita income is one of the highest in the Caribbean, approximately $24,087. And that's in American dollars. At the end of 2018, the labor force participation rate was 56.6% for women. And going over more towards the food area, taking a look, I looked at basically what was like a famous 1950s restaurant, right? Like what was around the area, what was going on, right? And I found something rather interesting. What I found was a old menu, and there's a huge market for some of these old menu things. Right now it's on eBay. And I say right now, it is April 10th. I am recording this. It is $71.25 if you want to get it on eBay. It is for the Trocadero Restaurant Aruba, Netherlands Antilles Islands Vintage Menu. Very, very interesting. It is one of those things that I find to be funny because they have kept it in really good condition. So taking a look at some of the things on this menu here, for an appetizer, you've got boneless sardines on toast, garni, Alaskan king crab meat, chilled tender shrimp cocktail, you have Blue Point oysters, Caribbean lobster cocktail, and marinated broiled shrimps. The prices on these are pretty great. Like the shrimps, yeah, it looks like it's about $4. And then for the shrimps cocktail, it was $3.50. Fresh clams, you're going to get six for about $2.50. You can have a canapé of black caviar garni for about $4. Some seafood crepes for $5.50. And then a coquille Saint-Jacques. Served on a natural scallop shell for $4. I mean, just crazy prices here. You got green turtle soup for $2. There's native fish soup served in a cup for $1.50. They have consommés. So this is a pretty fancy restaurant, I gotta admit. There's filet of red snapper and breaded fried stuffed shrimps in a diable sauce. And you've got turtle steak, imported squid, sole, and then trout red snapper. There's conch, there's baby shark steak. That is $6. So, and probably not available anymore. There is faux crab meat, faux young hay. Then there is curry shrimps, Java Hondenport. There is shrimp chow mein, so a wide variety here. You have salads, you have, you know, different things going on. Basically, you've got one side of the menu in English, the whole other side is in Spanish. So you have pescados y mariscos, you have ensaladas, platos fríos, sopas y cremas, and then you have entradas for the appetizers. Platos orientales is the thing for all of your chow mein and your curry shrimp. The main meat dishes here, though, U.S. filet mignon with bacon and mushrooms. You have Old English mixed grill mushroom sauce, and then two center cut pork chops, and then tenderloin steak. They do have wiener schnitzel. And then a T-bone steak, and then they have a Chateaubriand for two persons. It's about $13.50, so not very cheap. The desserts they've got here, though, they have a banana boat, they have a peach Melba, a pear Belle Helene, pear Belle Helene, and then a dessert of the day is $1. They have fresh fruits for $1. They have a confetra pancakes for $2, and then a fruit cocktail for $1.25, and then a cup royale for $1.50. Pretty interesting. And then, of course, they've got their wines, their champagnes, their sparkling wine. And so kind of a fancier place, you know, like they really pulled out all the stops. And the picture here for Trocadero is a fishing net. And it says Aruba NA, so the Netherlands Antilles. And it's got, you know, it's got the fishing net with a lobster, some clams, a fish, a crab, and then there's just shrimps like hanging out. But it's a red menu, and it's interesting. I'm sure 100 years from 1950s, which, by the way, we're closer to the 100-year mark. Like I said, so 2050, I'm sure we'll look back on some of this and be like, wow, can't believe we were just eating some of that stuff, especially the prices. It's already crazy now, let alone then. But yeah, going through all that, let's look at what else was eaten on the island, not at just the resort areas. And I have wheninaruba.com. They go over the basics of local cuisine. They've got here bolo. So there's several types of cake. Like they mentioned earlier, that bolo the black cake, right? So yeah, you've got many different types. They're all used for birthdays, national holidays, religious holidays, and other celebrations. Most traditional cakes include bread pudding, so pan di bollo, cashew cake, or bollo de cachupete, chocolate torte, so bollo de chateau, eggnog cake, a bollo ponche de crema, and then prune cake, so tarte di prune, and black cake, bollo preto. But moving on, going over coconut water here, the ubiquity of coconut palms on Aruba provides locals and island guests the opportunity to enjoy fresh coconut water, one of Mother Nature's most delicious and healthy beverages. Streetside vendors cut the tops off of young coconuts right in front of the customers to ensure freshness, handing over the beverage to be sipped directly from the shell with a straw. Parties sometimes feature fresh coconut water, with the famous Coconut Charlie cracking coconuts at hotel parties for 40 years. I tell you what, I have yet to enjoy fresh coconut water from the coconut itself. And I don't know. I can only imagine the greatness of having that straw and you just sip it straight out of it, especially if the coconuts have been kept like super chilled somewhere. Like the refreshness and everything with that, like I just made up that word even just thinking of it. I can't imagine. Then you have next here, Kosdushi. Arubans satisfy their persistent sweet tooth with a variety of homemade confections, collectively known as Kosdushi. Kosdushi. Kokata, a fudge-like candy made with sugar and coconut, is a popular treat alongside two other candies, Tintalaria and Panseku. I believe is how you Panseku, both made with sugar and nuts. Two favorite cookies are the looks like cookie lerchi, a very simple sugar cookie baked to a crunch, and the mankaron, a coconut infused cookie with a cake like texture. Other sweet delights include quesillo, which is Aruba's own take on a caramel flan, and tamarind balls, which are small globes of tamarind pulp rolled in granulated sugar for that perfect balance of sweet and sour. All these treats are ubiquitously found on the island at supermarkets, pharmacies, gas stations, and even hardware stores. Some of the main dishes here, you've got fish creole, locally known as pisca hasa creole, is a traditional Aruban dish still prepared in many a home and restaurant on the island. The dish is deliciously simple, pan-fried slices of fresh fish fillet served in a basic gravy of onion, tomato, bell pepper, and garlic. The only thing that can make the meal more perfect is a side plate of panbati or funchi. And that is what is next. Funchi, which is Aruba's own version of polenta. It is a thick cornmeal porridge traditionally served as an accompaniment to rich stews and fish platters. Funchi porridge can also be cooled, cut into flat slices, and fried to a light golden brown as a crispy variation. I think I'd like the fried funchi. The funchi porridge, really warm in the morning, that kind of thing, kind of like grits. I could go for that. I could go for it. And then the other thing there with the funchi, panbati. Like funchi, panbati serves as the perfect accompaniment to stews and soups and fish dishes. It is made from the corn flour and cooked in a cazuela, a traditional clay baking dish originally from Spain. Panbati lies somewhere between a flatbread and a pancake. Compared to an American pancake, it is denser and less sweet. So it's a very, it's not like a crepe where it's a thin savory sometimes, but it is a very thick savory pancake. So, I could do with that. Give me some panbati, some funchi, some of that, good old stew, and some fish creole, and we got ourselves a hot time. And speaking of hot times, you got hot sauce. Apparently, the island is very known for hot sauce. And so if you're from Aruba and you're like, oh, I've got a lot of hot sauce, I eat it all the time, I love it, I'm a huge hot sauce fan, please send me some. I'm sure there are some great island hot sauces. We already have some in the Caribbean. Now you get, you know, closer to the South American island. I mean, come on, Aruba. You can send me a message to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com, or you can visit our merch store, order some stuff, send a message, or you could, you know, just hit up the website, take a look around, and then try to message me in that email and be like, hey, I got a case of this hot sauce, and we want you to try it for TikTok or for YouTube, and I might do so. And so the Aruban hot sauce, it's an assortment of all natural made in Aruba hot sauces and can be found in just about every restaurant and home, plus several grocery stores on the island. These hot sauces, known as pica among the locals, pack an intense punch, for they feature the exceptionally hot Madame Jeannette pepper, a variety of chili closely related to habanero and and Scotch bonnet varieties. The Madame Jeannette's fire is slightly tampered by green papaya and a particularly unique version of Aruban pica called pica de papaya. And I will admit, I've never had that. I've never had pica de papaya. I have not had the Madame Jeannette pepper either. I don't think I've tried something with it. And so I wonder if it is a bitter or sweet pepper. Most of the time that habanero, it's pretty bitter. They always add a lot of fruits. So I've got a feeling that it's towards that because they're adding papaya. Then you've got the keri-keri, drier types of firm white flesh fish such as barracuda or shark are ideally suited for making one of Aruba's popular seafood dishes, keri-keri. It is a fish fillet and it's boiled in salted water, removed and shredded, and then sautéed in butter with tomato, onion, celery, bell pepper, fresh basil, black pepper, and annatto spice to create a tasty, satisfying meal. And that does sound super. Just white fish, you know, they're like, we're just gonna try to soften this up, shred it, and then saute it. And it's like, yeah, I can run with that. And then you have ayaka. Aruban families and friends gather together during the Christmas season to make ayakas, a traditional holiday treat adopted from South America, although no two families use the exact same recipe. Ayakas are generally made by smearing plantain or banana leaves with a cornmeal dough. Well, what does that sound like, folks? Tamales. but anyways, it's in it's made by smearing plantain or banana leaves with a cornmeal dough, adding a mixture of chicken, pork, ham bits, and spices, plus a potpourri of prunes, raisins, olives, pickles, cashews, pekilili, and pearl onions, and folding the assemblages into neat little packets to be boiled for an hour. So yeah, South America, they are definitely known for their empanadas, and then there are different versions of tamales that have gone all the way through Central America to Mexico. And so the ayaka, I could totally see that being nearby. Then you have keshiyena. This is an Aruban dish which translates to stuffed cheese. I mean, I'm already on board. I'm captain. Give me the hat. It is traditionally made by filling the leftover rind of an edam or gouda cheese wheel with spiced meat, onion, tomato, green pepper, olives, capers, raisins, and pica lily, covering the wheel with its original cap and then baking the stuffed wheel in the oven until hot and bubbly. Some cooks choose to conveniently line a casserole dish with slices of cheese instead of using the scooped cheese shell. Probably because a scooped cheese shell is hard to complete, for one. Two, way more expensive. And three, if you do it in a casserole dish, I am sure you're going to be able to control that a lot easier. But the next one here, pastecchi, this is an irresistible half moon pastry, and it is the national snack of Aruba. The classic pastecchi is made by stuffing a pocket of slightly sweet dough with cheese and then deep frying it until tender perfection. Other savory fillings include ham, beef, chicken, and fish. Pastecchis are sold island-wide at grocery stores, convenience stores, and snack bars. So, yeah, pastecchi. Stoba, it is basically a different type of form of soapy, but we'll get to that in just a second. Despite the warm weather, stews are popular on Aruba. It is a classic Aruban recipe for beef stew, so carne stoba, and goat stew, cabrito stoba, and each feature meat, potato, onion, garlic, and chili pepper, and a tomato-based gravy. Conch stew, so calco stoba, is made from the meat of conch shellfish, onion, bell pepper, and a white wine vinegar stock. Two popular side dishes, funchi and panbati, back again, are usually served with these stews for a well-rounded meal. Soapy, on the other hand, is several soups are especially popular with the locals. Soapy yambo is Antillean gumbo, made with a pureed okra for a thick, smooth consistency. Soapy mandongo is a traditional combination of tripe, spices, a medley of vegetables, and West Indian pumpkin or calabas. Soapy oyster is the local oyster soup, with each restaurant and household claiming rights to the best recipe on the island. Soapy cabrito is a bouillon-based soup made with goat meat, garlic, tomato, celery, bell pepper, and vermicelli. And that is mainly some of the main foods you're going to be getting here. But I wanted to go over, like, I don't know, maybe some booze and stuff. So I started to look up some things, and I went to Aruba in the 20th and 21st centuries off of Wikipedia and found something talking, you know, just like traditional drinks and those things. And you have ponche crema, and it is a cream-based liqueur that originates in Venezuela and was brought to nearby Trinidad and Tobago. And they developed their own version. Ponche de crema is recipes vary depending on the region, but main ingredients typically include milk, egg, sugar, rum, and other minor ingredients such as vanilla, nutmeg, cinnamon, and lemon rind. A variant type is prepared with concentrated liquid coffee or instant coffee powder. However, the most references to the ponche crema name aim at a traditional commercial product available since 1900, whose recipe and manufacturing process are kept secret. Ponche crema is a beverage traditionally served during Christmas time, much as eggnog is in the United States. It is usually served cold in a small cups, either as an aperitif or a posse café. The origin of the recipe for this commercial product could not be determined. Wow. So basically, I'm guessing just American travelers, what have you, they traveled down to the island and kept making eggnog. I mean, that's what I'm guessing, but, you know, they have their own liqueur. It's cream-based. You never know. You never know. Maybe more people need to research it, and if people want to give me money to do that, I am more than willing to do so. So that is Aruba. Through the 1950s, a little bit of history, lots of good food, even a menu for those menu heads out there that like to look up menus consistently and try to order them for $71 off of eBay. I'm sure it's a good memento to someone who traveled to the island often or maybe had a parent or something that worked there in the 50s. But yeah, that is Aruba. It is a complicated history with all the oil and different things going on. But it's also a complicated history of, you know, food and how it travels. Being an island nation, you have to adapt, to the imports, currently, but definitely in the 1950s, you'd have to. And on top of that, you're taking pretty much anything you can from South America, because that's your closest neighbor being, near Venezuela. And so really for the 1950s in South America, Aruba would be a pretty nice place to land to have a plate in time. I'd have a nice fresh coconut water and have me some stopa or soapy. Or I should say stoba. I'll be correct. Stoba or soapy with some panbati and some funchi, and finish it up with a nice dessert. And it's hard to pick the desserts, to be honest with you. I mean, the bolo, the black cake, so the bolo preto, I want to try that. But the cashew cake to me sounds interesting. So the bolo di cashew pete, that sounds very, very interesting. I've had bread pudding, I don't know how many times. And then the candies, I wouldn't mind trying, you know, the kosdushi. But yeah, and then lots of fish and cornmeal things, hot sauces, great plate. Great plate in time, 1950s Aruba. And so, of course, the last thing we do, we try to see where our plate in time is going to land next. And so we head over to the random continent generator. Right now, it is on Africa. I don't have anybody to bounce off of to see where they think it'll go. If it lands on South America, I have to change it. I have to jump out because we just did it. So, you know, I'm hoping it lands on North America. Once again, I'm from North America, you know, the United States. That's going to make it a lot easier, to try to get done. And then on top of that, really, I'm hoping for a good, you know, 1800s, decade. So, clicking here off of Africa, let's see where we're headed. Oh, it says Africa. I am going to Africa again. This should be fun then. So Africa is the continent. I gotta see what, you know, decade it'll do. And I always have to go in here. I gotta change what the criteria is. I always, oh man, it's always too early. You know what I mean? Like, you gotta be able to do something with that, guys. I need to make my own generator on generator mix. But right now, it's got 2011, 2012. So those are 2010s, both. 1901, 1937, 38. Ooh, there's a 2014. So three in the 2010s. Wow. And then 1914 and 1963. If I had to guess, I've got a hard guess. It's going to go somewhere in the 30s. I would say 2010s because that's the most, but I don't know. 30s are calling my name. 1930s Africa is what I'm guessing. We already know it's Africa. Here we go. 1950s Africa. It is 1951. So, yeah. That will be the next plate in time, is 1950s Africa. And just thank you, everybody, to listening along and enjoying me rambling on about Aruba in the 1950s, my crazy, you know, time-traveling plate. Obviously much shorter, but we've got some big things coming up in Culinary Convo Land. We've got, you know, our new segment, Willamette Valley Spotlight. It's going to be coming up here in the next, I would say in the next month or so, you know, so keep your eyes out. And then on top of that, our social media channels, just, yeah, join the TikTok, join our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, any of those, you can run for it. We also have our YouTube channel. We're creating things all the time. And just engage with us. Tell us about recipes. Tell us about all the things that you guys have been working on. We also have a Reddit page, which I'm still trying to figure out. You know, I'm a millennial. I use Reddit all the time. Yeah, not the way that I've been doing it. I'm a mod now. This is crazy. So yeah. Have a good time with that. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you all next time on Plate in Time in 1950s Africa, and I will see you all next week. Goodbye. This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Ream, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.